You ever have a t-shirt that you love? I mean, one that you really love, even if it's beat up. I've got one with it's got a bleach stain on it. I still wear it. Betty hates it. She hates it because it's got a dead body on it. And the legs are akimbo. Like a body thrown from out of a window on purpose. And he's got a torch in his hand, dead body, an Olympic torch. And he's a chalky, so you really can't see his face, just the outline, you know? A chalky Olympic t-shirt. And it says, Chicago Olympics 2016, chalky on the ground, dead. And I love that t-shirt, and Betty hates it, but you know what? I think I got to take it out and start wearing it again because I'm a little skinnier. Maybe I can fit into it. And also, because of the big news, the jailed former governor of Rio de Janeiro is telling judges down there that he paid $2 million for the votes of the International Olympic Committee members to award the Brazilian city the 2016 Olympic Games. Rio was chosen over Chicago, Tokyo, and Madrid. And Chicago's bid, considered by many the strongest bid of all, was the first to be tossed. Despite President Barack Obama holding Richard J. M. Daley's hand, the two of them, on the edge of discovery and adventure, holding hands and supporting each other. And I was out in the Daley Plaza when the announcement was made, and and all the little underlings and political underlings and people that were going to make money, and the staffers and the marketers and all the people that were going to make money from the project, crying. And it was like one of those days when you have a cigarette, you just want to roll over and have a cigarette, and you love it. I don't like people's misery, but I did like this. And now that it happened, because I didn't want the Olympic Games, and now that we see what happened, it's the first time in the history of Chicago that the taxpayer were saved by bribes. The taxpayers actually benefited from bribes. Now, there were a lot of those political insiders buying land all around. Some of them used, public union money to buy land. They were buying land around the footprints of the so-called Chicago Olympics. They were going to make a fortune. All an inside move, and now they got stuck. I guess they're building that temple to Obama, the Temple of Love and Fealty for Barack Obama in Jackson Park. That might save some people who bought some land, but not many. I just love it. Chalky. Chalky for everybody. We're also going to have two lawyers with the question, can Harvey Weinstein get a fair trial? Harvey Weinstein, the producer and alleged sex predator and all-around creepy, weird guy that you'd like to punch in the guts if you ever looked at your daughter or your wife. He's got a legal problem, right? Donna Rotunno and Damon Chironas will join us. And I have to ask Donna Rotunno, have you ever seen any other lawyer, female lawyer, that doesn't believe in Me Too? Because she doesn't. And a story about a tragedy that's not really getting enough coverage, should get more, in Illinois' heartland. The good people of Hardin, Illinois, down southwestern Illinois on the Illinois River, they're not the kind that band together and ask for handouts, and they're just not part of that whole give me something crowd. They're trying to make the best of what they can. They're cut off. The bridge is out. They're cut off and isolated in the middle of Illinois between the Mississippi and the Illinois River. And we're going to have Tom Ringhausen, the orchard grower, famous orchard grower who grows the best peaches in the world, come and join us and talk to us. Jeff Carlin is here, of course. Jeff, the outstanding producer of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis and my friend and co-host here of the Chicago Way. And me, John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune and a member of its editorial board. And you know where you are? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN+.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So, Jeff, you know, I put out on social media and said we'd have an announcement, and some people were guessing at it. And then one guy said it, talking about 5 a.m. in the morning. Let's go over it. Let's get the stats right and the details right. Sweet. What's happening here?
All right, everybody who's our fan, great fans and followers and subscribers alike, you need to set an alarm, a calendar warning for Friday, this Friday coming up, which is July 12th. At 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, we are doing, John and I will be taking to the airwaves. We'll be filling in for Justin Kaufman, who hosts Extension 720, which is a huge honor just to be able to say we were hosting Extension 720.
Right. We'll be hosting Extension 720, the Chicago way, baby.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got some guests working. We've got some ideas, some fun stuff. They'll definitely do some calls. We'll talk some cooking and grilling. Give some advice on that, ask us questions. We'll definitely get into some politics because it wouldn't be the Chicago way if we didn't.
Right, and what kind of fashion statements you want to make during your next protest at Navy Pier. Should you wear the faux body armor, you know, on the outside of your shirt? That might, you know.
Should we be able to cover our faces in public if we're wreaking havoc and mayhem?
Right, because there's nothing like a masked man to inspire confidence.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So, join us Friday, 7 to 8:30 on Extension 720 WGN.
You can listen on the app. You can go online to WGN's website. Listen to it live, WGNradio.com. We'd love to have you there live. Obviously, we will put up a podcast of it eventually. But if you can listen live, we can call then, too. And you can even call from the stream if you're listening anywhere in the world. We'll take your calls. And it should be a very interesting time. I'm excited.
And if you could make sure you call and call the station and say, you know what? Those two guys, Carlin and Cass, they should be on the radio, you know?
Exactly. I
appreciate it.
What's before us this week? We're excited. This is very interesting, John. You kind of pulled together a couple of very good guests for us today.
Well, we have the lawyer representing the Harvey Weinstein because so many other lawyers have dropped out.
Yeah, there have been lawyers before that in this case, and everyone's seen this high-profile case for sure. And we want him in to talk about, to discuss the why of taking a case like that seems like it's an uphill push all the way. There's some interesting insight, I think, onto the other side of the coin in this situation and the underbelly, the unspoken truth of what Hollywood really is.
Especially in the context of now the Jeffrey Epstein case that's breaking out in the Lolita Island of Lolitas, or whatever they called it. Yeah, it should be fascinating. And also, Tom Ringhausen, my buddy, Marine, Orchard Man, Hardin County, Illinois.
Right near the nose of Illinois. If you've ever seen Illinois on a map, it kind of looks like a face, you know, down south,
yeah, southwest.
A little bump there is mostly underwater, and it's not getting a lot of coverage.
But if you like peaches, you know what you do? You get down to Alton. And you stay overnight. And some great. There's a great catfish and chicken place, fried chicken, an Italian restaurant there. Okay, a lot of fried food. And then you drive out the next morning and stop at Tom.
But first, let's welcome our next guest,
Harvey Weinstein. You remember him? He just lost his lawyers, a Harvard law professor who had to drop out, saying, "I can't do it. It conflicts with my teaching duties," or whatever. And the pressure is ramping up not to give this guy a fair trial. Jeff and I think that he should have a fair trial. And joining us, Harvey Weinstein's lawyers, Donna Rotunno and Damon Charonis. Can Harvey Weinstein get a fair trial?
We absolutely think so, John.
I mean, I think the question is, can people be fair, right? And I think, you know, when this trial starts, and without getting into all of the things that are going to happen, but yeah, we think that the evidence is going to be different than sort of what the narrative has been. And I think at the heart of the jury system. I think people want to get it right. I think people want to be fair. Not everybody, but that's why we have the jury selection process where we get to, you know, engage in questioning and try to ferret out some of the individuals who may have an agenda. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think people can be fair and they want to be fair, or else they'd, you know, be digging ditches somewhere. You know, this is what I do, and I bank on people being fair and following their own.
Well, I also think in a case like this, you have the opportunity to look 12 people in the eye and tell them things that they may not already know. They think they hear, or they hear things in the media, and they think that that's true. And then they sit down and they listen to a trial, and you start to really convey to them what the real evidence is. And I think at that point, we have the ability and the skill to change their minds.
We're talking to Donna Rotunno and Damon Chironis, skilled criminal defense lawyers here in Chicago who picked up the Harvey Weinstein case. Donna, I read one of the Reuters accounts. You said something that shocked me because I've never heard a female lawyer say something like this, and probably you're the only one. But you really don't believe in Me Too.
The problem is, I don't believe in movements in general. I think the problem with movements is they're devoid of logic and fact. And people play on their emotions when they jump into these movements for whatever reason and whatever type of movement it is, without really looking at facts and circumstances. And as a logical, fair-minded woman, I feel like we should look at fact before we jump on any bandwagon that says this is what you should believe merely because you're female.
And to that point, I mean, that's obviously where the crux of the difficulty in trying this case is, or defending this case, is that there has been so much coverage, and that the quote-unquote Me Too movement has crossed into pretty much every facet of American life, at the very least. But how? What do you say to someone, lawyers or other people, who are saying, how do you take in this case? How are you taking this case? I mean, that's got to be out there. And why? Is it the notoriety? Is it the fact that you love a difficult case? What really kind of drove both of you to this position?
Can I write the screenplay?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is, like, we're trial lawyers. That's what we do, right? We don't, you know, we try cases that, you know, people look at our clients and think, you know, the worst of them, sometimes on a lesser level than this, because it's not as publicized. But, you know, it's not like we're going out of our skill set or out of our comfort zone. We represent individuals charged with serious crimes. And we've never been the types of lawyers who take cases just for the publicity. As a matter of fact, you know, we're kind of on the other side of the spectrum as far as wanting the publicity. But it's a great case as far as the trial is going to be concerned. That's what we're worried about. And, you know, the majority of lawyers who said, why would you take this case, are the ones who wish they had the case, right?
I agree with that. I had a great professor in law school who said, in order to do this work, you have to believe everyone has the right to a defense. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be you, and there are things that I've said no to in my career, but a case like this, I think, is so chock full of so many elements that defense attorneys love. I mean, this is the type of case where the truth is going to come out in cross-examination, and it will be very dramatic. And I think, you know, any lawyer that's good at this would love that work.
Well, let's go over the specifics of it. What are the charges, and where's the trial going to be, Donna?
The trial is Manhattan, Lower Manhattan in New York City. It involves sexual assault type charges. There's what we would call rape, you know, colloquially is the term rape, and other type of forcible sexual assault acts. The question is, are those acts consensual or not? And it will be our job to convince the jury that they absolutely were.
Now, part of this is what happens in the courtroom, and part of this is what happens in the media. You're going into media arena, New York. I don't know. Is it on? It won't be televised, or what?
It will not be televised. We have heard rumblings that some members of the media may be asking for portions of the trial to be taped, but recorded. But that's broadcast. That has not come to fruition as of now.
So, given the media part of it, you're already starting. You're doing this interview. You've done other interviews. I'll probably write a column on it.
You're the last interview, John.
I'm the last interview you'll ever do on this subject, right?
You're the first and last one. We wanted to give you the exclusive.
Dude, you know, thanks for not treating me like a chum balone. We'll get into that in a bit.
You got it. I would never do that.
But you do have the media war as well. And part of it is you're going to be putting women up on the stand that have celebrity, and you're going to be deconstructing their cases. You are going to be accused of blaming the victim, not, you know, all this stuff that you're going to try to deconstruct and take from them will be politically antithetical to Me Too.
One of my biggest problems with another movement is this, you know, believe all women. And believe all women is, it might even be more dangerous than Me Too, because Me Too is something that women sort of jumped on to say, I too have been victimized in some way. And obviously people have the right to feel the way they feel in whatever circumstances they've been in. But when you look at believe all women takes away the, you know, trier of fact, whether that's a judge or a jury or whatever, to be able to say, I can't believe you without fact. And so to me, what is even is worse is this notion of you can't challenge someone because you're just supposed to believe her. And so I think our job here is to show that not only can you challenge, but you have to. You have to. And if we start talking about this believing all women, we are moving so far away from the principles of our justice system, which are people have the right to a fair trial and you have the right to cross-examine. And so to me, and as a woman and as a lawyer that does this work, challenging those things are of prime importance so we can get back and the pendulum can swing back to a point where people can get fair trials, media or not.
You know, cross-examination in a criminal trial is not victim shaming. Allegations have been made. He has a right to confront his accusers through his attorneys. And what happens, I think, is sometimes prosecutors and the media, they use the term victim shaming when it's not. We have a job to do to get to the truth, to ask questions. And it may not be comfortable. It may not be pretty, but it's a job that we take seriously. And there's no other way to do it. And I don't think, you know, sort of hiding behind or accusing lawyers of victim shaming, if they do it properly and if they do it ethically, I don't think that's a sort of a fair play either for people to call it that.
One of the things you probably will ask people is if they used their sexual, this is very sensitive, I got to be very careful. I'm married to a beautiful Sicilian woman who wants me to be very careful here. People, I didn't say any gender, who would use their sexual appeal to encourage others to do them favors.
Well, I think you can talk about it in another way that maybe wouldn't be as controversial. When we talk about this a lot in the office as we're getting ready for this, everybody wants to say that Harvey used his influence and his power to get what he wanted. But really, I think the opposite is also true. These women that were coming to talk to Harvey or meet Harvey or know Harvey also wanted something from him. And they were using a power that they had. So he, too, was being used in this whole interaction. And so I think that gets lost. I want to walk a red carpet. I want to go to a Hollywood party. I want to meet fancy people. And I think that to talk about it only from one side really isn't fair or just. And that's part of why we're doing this.
Well, that will be the significant media bite out of it. It'll be part of, I can see both of you, you're on the podcast now, but soon it'll be in box, you'll be on boxes on the TV, on cable news, either Fox, CNN, MSNBC, all of them, Today Show, all of them, and you're going to be back and forth with Gloria Allred or with some lawyer representing the Me Too side of things, and it'll just become people in boxes. Yes, Damon?
Yeah, I don't know about that. It will be talked about. Yeah, I mean, but what are you going to do? I mean, that's the nature of some of the practice of law right now. I mean, I don't plan on being in that situation myself, but what's the point of that, right? I mean, I want to limit this case to the facts of the case, right? That's what my job is. It's going to be hard to do. There's certainly going to be a broader discussion on it, but I'm not going to have any conversations with Ms. Allred in the near future.
Is she representing any of the alleged victims?
She is involved. Not victim.
She's involved in the case.
She's involved in the case.
Okay, so but you will be counterpoint with some, you know, maybe one of the Kavanaugh screamers or something. You'll be in that mix.
Sure.
And that's how the American public will come to at least consider these issues. And the American public, a small, tiny bit of it, will be a jury. Will there be a jury trial here?
Yes. Yes.
So?
What I hope is after we're either before we convince a jury or after we convince a jury, I'm hoping that at least what we can provide in our defense of this is that there is another part of this conversation. And it saddens me that what I've seen up to this point, especially just personally, is that there really hasn't been a conversation on both sides. And I think some people are afraid to step out now and say, you know, this is how I feel and this is why I feel it. And I'm just not afraid. I'm not afraid to talk about what I think is right. And I do think that the work that we do on this case hopefully will create an environment for another side of this conversation.
One thing I could offer, another thing that for public service, you could probably invite every parent that has thought about their daughter. Their daughter's 12, 13 years old. She's pretty. Everyone tells you she's pretty. She's on, you know, she's photogenic. And people say, maybe she could be a model, or maybe she could be a Hollywood star, or she could be, you know, work for some major news organization as a presenter of alleged facts or something. Maybe they should focus on this too.
Sure.
On what happens and why people do what they do.
Absolutely. And maybe, you know, this whole circumstance will allow the industry to handle things better.
Maybe. Damon, I do have a question for you. I don't think your colleague Donna was part of this, but you should help, if you could, listeners understand the nature of you and me and Chumbalone.
Yes. Chumbalone, you've gotten a lot of mileage out of that word that you did not come up with yourself. It was uttered, I believe, during the testimony at the Family Secrets trial.
Never claimed I did.
I know, you're right. But almost, I mean, it became so synonymous with you that people, I think you made it up. But yeah, it was used at the trial, the Family Secrets trial. I was one of Anthony Doyle's attorneys. And I don't even remember the exact context he used it in or who he was describing.
Cattle Prods.
Cattle Prods.
For those of you who are listening in, his name is Anthony Doyle. Legally, he's a cop or was a cop in charge of the part of the evidence section. But his real name was Anthony Pasiafumi, and he was a Chinatown guy who loved to do curls and biceps on the corner to show off his, you know, ripped guns, as they say. I used to hang around with a guy, Frank Calabrese, and when Frank was in prison, I think, counselor, Mr. Doyle Pasiafumi was asked by defense counsel, not you, I don't think, why were you agreeing? Why were you nodding your head and agreeing as the FBI was taping and Calabrese was talking about using cattle prods on witnesses in Family Secrets? And he said, because I didn't want to look like no Chumbalone, like an idiot, yeah, stupid.
I don't have the transcript in front of me, Mr. Katz, but that sounds like it. There's been a lot of cases between now and then, but that might be accurate.
Where is Mr. Doyle now?
I believe Mr. Doyle, I don't know where he is, but I know he's finished serving his sentence. I haven't spoken to him in a couple of years. But he received a 12-year sentence, and he had to do, I think, 85% of that. He got the same sentence as I believe Nick Calabrese got, which is interesting. But he served his time, and hopefully he's, you know, enjoying life, you know. But he's out of prison.
Nothing like being out of prison and being able to have a cup of coffee when you want, out in the sunshine.
You know, and in that case, remember, there was also a recording where Frank Calabrese was talking to Mr. Doyle and somebody else, and when Mr. Calabrese got up and walked away, Doyle looked at the other guy and said, you know what, you even know what this guy's talking about? And, you know, so there was, there were some interesting things in those tapes.
Yeah, I guess my brain shut off with the cattle prods, and the bloody glove. But we'll talk about that. I'd love, you know, we should go to Carmine's at say like on a Thursday. Yeah. You know, maybe run into an old man who sits there sometimes in the booth, and we should have lunch
in November.
Okay. In November. Okay. Thank you. When is the trial?
September 9th. Jury selection starts September 9th.
Who is your jury consultant?
We do not.
We were hoping you could do it, John. We were going to see if you could come out to New York with us for a couple of weeks for jury selection. What do you think?
Definitely, I'm there.
Shumbalone detecting.
That's it. Shumbalone services. What do you look for, Donna, in a jury?
I think there's a few different types of jurors that we'll look for in this case, and I don't want to give too many of my secrets away. But I do think that fair-minded people. I think that if I can find one or two conservatives in New York, I would like a couple of those. I think strong women. I think strong women will look at this, and once they hear the evidence, I think that they'll be good jurors in a case like this.
Pearl's okay. Wearing white gloves in the afternoon, not okay. I would just say. That's just me. Given the Epstein.
Yes.
Okay, the Epstein thing. Bill Clinton going there, I think, 18, 20 times on Fantasy Island. I don't know. Trump saying, I think he likes younger women, but I don't think they have him there. How does that complicate things for you?
I think any case involving sexual assault claims while this is going on just keeps it in the news, frankly. So I think it affects us a little bit that way. Frankly, I think any type of situation that alleges younger people are involved maybe takes a little heat off us.
Because your whole thing is your argument is going to be consensual.
Absolutely right.
And you can't give consent when you're 14 years old.
Absolutely right.
Mr. Epstein, I'm not for capital punishment, but I am for beating the shit out of people who would touch a little girl. I'm just saying. David Chironis, Donna Rotunno, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way, and I hope we can talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Right, thanks, John.
Good luck.
To the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. Move into the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches.
There are people who don't run to the media and don't ask for favors and don't beg for help. They're reliant and they take care of themselves and their kin and the people close to them. And they suffer. And the people in Calhoun County are suffering right now. The Illinois River rose, the Mississippi River, the floods. The bridge got washed out, and these people are stuck. Some are farmers, orchard growers. They're stuck there waiting for things to, I guess, improve where their people can get in and out easier and get their produce to market. And one of the people from down there is my friend, Tom Ringhausen, the expert orchard grower and the grower of the best peaches, damn peaches I've ever eaten in my life. Ringhausen Orchards, Tom Ringhausen. How's it going down there?
We're starting to, the Brussels ferry started running Friday about 3 in the afternoon, and that's improving access to the county. The Campsville ferry is open. Route 100 north is open, but it's going to be closed for about 4 days due to the flood that buckled the road up, so they're going to come in there all at once and redo that, but our access is starting to improve. We can't get out on the Mississippi side yet due to the high water. We got a couple of ferries there at the Winfield Ferry and the Golden Eagle Ferry that are still closed. But we can get out to the north, which is a long trip through the hills, but now Route 96 and Route 100 are open, which helps us out. But I've lost had 20 foot of water in my fruit market and stuff, and I've lost that, and there's still about 8 or 9 foot in the building. So I don't know when we'll ever get back in there, but it's been a tough ordeal for us, for me.
Now, I've driven down there. I've driven down past Springfield to Hardin on the little bridge. There's like a causeway. What is that bridge called, Tom, that gets
me? The Joe Page Bridge. It's the longest lift span bridge in the world and on the historic registry. And the bridge is all right, but the water on the other side is still like 8, 9 foot deep.
Jeez.
And so you guys can get on the bridge.
Fine,
yeah. And the bridge is intact. You guys can cross the bridge, but the problem is getting off on the other side is you're underwater and there's nowhere to go.
They've got it barricaded off on this side. You ain't going nowhere when you get over there unless you want to go swimming. And there's still a lot of people in the county that are boating in and out to their jobs.
Taking boats, huh?
Yeah.
To work.
Man, this has been going on since like middle of May.
You went through this in 93, I remember. Was it 93?
Yes, sir. Yeah. We had another 500-year flood 26 years after the last one. You know, come about 475 years too soon. But, yeah, these seem like these floods are getting worse. We had one in 2014 or 15 in December, right there before New Year's Eve. Moved everything out of my fruit market and stuff. But it was laughing at the top of the levee then. So we're having these occurrences more often with all these wild rains and stuff.
And, Tom, what do the officials say to you guys as far as, you know, any timeline or is there any hope or anything relief for you guys?
I'm hearing from the buddy of mine was over there with this depth finder. He got a real good one on a boat, and the Corps engineers are in no hurry to repair the levee or to do anything right now. They're taking their sweet time.
Do they say why?
They don't say why. Them guys, I don't know, but they call on the shots on a lot of stuff, Corps engineers, so I don't know.
I know this is terrible because you're dealing with, you know, sorrow and tragedy, and I'm just thinking about eating peaches, okay? But where
that's fine with me.
Where do people, how can you get your peaches to market? These are the best. I've had peaches in Spain. I've had peaches in Greece. I've had the peaches of Chile. I mean, I've had peaches, the red, so-called Red Haven. Oh, you got to have them from Michigan. There is nothing like the Tom Ringhausen peaches from Calhoun County. I think it's the Bluffs. You're up high on limestone bluffs, and you got.
Yeah, we're sitting on high narrow ridges between the Illinois and Mississippi rivers, and we got that great soft fruit production. We're sitting on them limestone ridges. Limestone is a source of calcium that feeds the plant and the fruit, and apples especially love calcium. But it's all about the soil. We got good soil for fruit production. Grandpa always said it starts at the root.
Corn loves good limestone too for making whiskey, but that's a different state. Tom, so
you've had his peaches, haven't
I have,
you, Jeff?
John knocked on my door at 9:30 at night after driving hours to get down there and come back with a half a bushel full of peaches, and they were as big as my fists, which and I have very big fists, and then some.
Big as your head.
And big as my nephew's head. And the
there
best.
You go.
So good. Best fruit I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, and no smoke. That's absolutely true.
So where could people go to get your peaches now?
We got a little place up in Quincy, Illinois on Broadway and 36th Street there. No Kmart parking lot. We got a little stand set up. We're up there every now and then. And right now, my stand watchers or whatever, they've got other things. I also sell in Hardin, and I sell at my orchard. The Corner Tavern, Big John's Corner Tavern in Hardin. He's selling my peaches for me. You go in there and ask for peaches. He got them in the cooler.
All right, so you can get them there. You can get them in Quincy.
In Quincy.
You're not big on the internet thing, right?
Well, my daughter handles that. I'm computer illiterate. You know, I'm still on a flip phone. Before that, we communicated with two tin cans and a string. But
that's a typical Marine response.
That's right. I'm a jarhead. Yeah, root and crude and tattooed, all the above.
What's coming up now? What is being picked now from these?
Well, yes, we're picking Garnet Beauties today, and yesterday we picked Starfires and a few nectarines. We've already picked all our eight bowls, and the Red Havens are getting closer. They're on the doorstep probably sometime later this week.
What are the ones that when Betty and I came down, we got a bunch, and I got a box for Carrie Nahabedian, and she... a famous chef, and she sent them out to be processed in pit jam or preserves or something. What were the ones we picked?
I think you had some bounties, if I remember correctly.
God. With that picture of you with those...
peaches? Yeah. Them bounties.
And I ate those things. Those are real. You know, people thought, oh, this is a fake picture. It's not. I mean, really,
no.
One peach will do you, you know? My God.
Yeah.
And Tom, with all the stuff you're harvesting now and collecting, you run the risk, obviously, of not being able to distribute it. How long does this stuff last? I mean, what time like, timetable
well,
are you?
The peach probably lasts in the cooler about 2 weeks. And a while ago, I just got off the phone with a guy in Springfield's got a market up there. And he's coming down today or tomorrow for a load. So we're moving them because the peach crop in Calhoun County is maybe 30% of the crop this year.
So if people up here in Chicago, the Chicago area, if they want peach, they want their fruit market to carry the peaches, how do they do? What do they do? Just tell them to go get Tom Ringhausen peaches or Calhoun County peaches?
Come to Calhoun, yeah. Hey, right. Take a scenic drive south. But this year, we only the peach crop in Calhoun is about 30%, and some orchards have quit spraying already. And then we had a hailstorm here about a month ago or whatever that wiped a couple orchards out. So I'm sitting here with a pretty fair crop considering everything. And I don't know. I feel blessed in that respect. But like I said, I ain't got no shed. But it is what it is.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll be coming down to Calhoun County to see Tom Ringhausen and get some peaches. Everybody, listen, I can't go and get it. You're going to start calling me and saying, John, get me a bushel, get me a bushel. No, I can get, I got two brothers. I got Kerry and I got Jeff and I got the city desk at the Chicago Tribune.
There you go.
Can't carry more. I don't have a truck.
I know. Hey,
I wish I did.
Glad to see you when you come in, man.
Man, if I didn't have a job right now, I'd rent a truck, go down there, get some Calhoun County peaches, and set up a stand right on the corner, 79th Street somewhere.
You could make a boatload of money. I'm talking about boatloads.
The best peaches in the world, thanks Tom Ringhausen, and we're praying for everybody in Calhoun County and your town, and I hope things turn out, and I hope the powers that be, the federal government, start moving, and maybe J.B. Pritzker can use his little fancy boat there, the one that he got sick of.
There ain't been much shaking down here as far as IEMA and FEMA and the Corps and stuff. It's been pretty quiet, so I don't know what's going on there. Things seem to be moving slow in that respect.
Okay, Tom Ringhausen, we'll get right on it, and good luck to you, sir.
Thank you for everything. Take care. Bye.
See you, buddy. For Tom Ringhausen, master peach grower and orchard man from Calhoun County, between the Illinois River and the Mississippi, and the best peaches in the world. And also for lawyers Donna Rotuno and Damon Chironis, representing none other than Harvey Weinstein. Can he get a fair trial? Who knows? But the politics should be interesting. For Jeff Carlin, master producer, executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis, and me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. Don't forget to tune in Friday, the 12th, 7 to 8:30 on WGN. We'll take this thing live, the Extension 720, the Chicago way. And thanks for joining us.